Well, if you live in Richmond or you've ever traveled down number 5 road in Richmond, then you've likely experienced one of the most unique places or one of the unique stretches of road in the Lower Mainland. Often referred to as Religion Road, there's a 3-kilometer stretch of number 5 road in Richmond that has over 20 different religious institutions, religious buildings on this piece of road. And it's fascinating, on this simple 3-kilometer stretch of road, there's mosques, there's a Sikh temple, a Buddhist temple, a Hindu temple, and a number of churches among many other buildings scattered all up and down this road. It's fascinating to see this diverse, robust kind of this road. It's quite fascinating. If you haven't ever driven by it, I recommend it. And each of these buildings and each of these places functions as a type of hub for people to come and worship. People in their respective communities go to these buildings in a sense to worship together, to worship their gods, and to worship. And I remember being a kid, and I've shared this before, how as a kid I didn't grow up as a follower of Christ attending church now like I do as an adult. But my family upbringing was, my mom comes from a Muslim background, and my dad comes from a Hindu background. And so as a kid, I spent many times, you know, throughout the week going to the mosque, that place of worship to offer prayers, going to the temple to offer prayers there as well. And the one thing I remember as a kid being taught was that worshiping God was not something that you necessarily got to decide on for yourself, but worship was a prescriptive thing. That in these places of worship, worship was designed to be something that you did, certain prayers that you said in a certain way, and certain things that you did with your body and how you offered these prayers to the gods. For me, in a lot of my childhood, worshiping God was something that was prescriptive. It was a certain place that you had to go to on a certain day at a certain time. And as I started becoming a follower of Christ and started my own faith journey, I recognized that same kind of instinct in the back of my mind for worship to be something that is tied to a place was true for my story as well. Every time I step into a church building, I found myself feeling that connection of, this is a place of worship. Singing songs and participating in things like communion, as we will do in a little bit, seeing these as elements to guide my worship. But what if a building like a church was more than just a place we come to worship God? What if worshiping God meant more than just gathering here in a service like we are now, singing some songs and looking at the scriptures and participating in communion? What if worship was designed to be rather than prescriptive, but actually descriptive of something greater and something else? What if worship was not really necessarily what we do, but something that we lean into, something that we experience, something that we become? When the scriptures, the Psalms, provide a good picture of what it means to truly worship, to come back to the essence and the heart of worship. In Psalm 100, the writer writes this: "Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs, and know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name, for the Lord is good, and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations." Today we're continuing a series that we kicked off last week called Reimagining the Church. And in the series, we're asking the question, what is the church, and why do we exist here in the world today? And last week we explored how the church is a new people, a new type of people who have been created by God to live differently in the world. And today we're going to be exploring how this new people group, the church, are called to be people who worship. Called to be people who worship. And we're going to explore this idea by looking at two questions. The first is, why bother with worship? What difference does it have on our lives? And secondly, how do we worship well? Let's start with that first question of why bother with worship. Now, when you hear that simple word, worship, it might sound like a word that has a religious connection to it, something about connecting God maybe comes into your mind. Maybe you think about this, like, as I mentioned earlier, coming to a service and worshiping God through song or in being together. But that simple word, worship, is far greater than I think often we give it credit to. Because yes, it has a component of connecting to God and forming our relationship with him. But worship is a part of our everyday lives, whether we are aware of it or not. And the history of the word, the origin story of the word worship, gives some perspective on what it actually means and how it impacts our lives. The word worship comes from the Anglo-Saxon word worship, which over time was modified to worth-ship, which then eventually became the word we know today as worship. And so a simple working definition of this word that we maybe use quite regularly or think of quite regularly is that worship means to attribute worth or value to something or someone. Worship means to attribute worth or value to something or someone. And if we begin to look at our lives with this definition in mind, you might start to see worship in some of your everyday moments of life. We might value our popularity by the reactions we get on our social feed. We might value our money when we look at our bank accounts and the amount that we've accumulated over time. We might value our relationships when we think about our families or our friends or our meaningful connections that we have. We might even elevate our bodies looking to our health as being the thing that we value so much. And those things in and of themselves aren't bad things. Money, good health, and relationships are God-given beautiful gifts. But there can be a tilt in the way that we look to these things and our hearts can easily worship these things as being ultimately worthy, as being ultimately valuable, as being the thing that we ultimately pursue and give our best towards. And so when you hear that definition of something that we value or something that we hold as being worthy, all of a sudden, hopefully, you can start to see worship a little bit more in your everyday moments of life. A pastor named Louis Giglio said, "You simply follow the trail of your time, your affection, your energy, your money, and your allegiance. And at the end of that trail, you'll find a throne. And whatever or whoever is on that throne is what's of highest value to you. On that throne is what you worship." Where you spend your time, energy, and resources will tell you what you worship in life. And so the question isn't, do you worship? But the question is, what do you worship? All of us, whether we realize it or not, are prone to hold certain things or certain people even as being ultimately worthy. And we see them as being ultimately valuable and worth pursuing. And we give our best to those things. And so the question is, what do you worship? What do you worship? I remember when I was 12 years old, I was living at the time with my cousins. And I had an older cousin named Pam who was about 7 years older than me. And in my mind as a 12-year-old, she was the coolest person I'd ever met. She was an amazing athlete. She was a gifted artist. She was funny and had these amazing jokes that can make people laugh. She was an awesome student and was academically off the charts. And in a lot of ways, I wanted to be like her. And so whenever she was home from school and whenever we were in the house together, I'd always follow her around and try and mimic her movements. I'd try and remember jokes that she said so I could tell them later to my friends. I'd watch what she was eating at the dinner table as a way to try and eat the same foods. And I would listen to the same music as she did because I wanted in a lot of ways to be like her. I admired her so much. And whether we realize it or not, the people or the things that we look up to in life, we in some ways slowly over time become like them. Think about someone that you admire, that you respect, or someone you look up to, maybe a family member, a celebrity figure, maybe even an author or someone. Chances are that over time, as you look at that value and that high regard you have for that individual, that you've probably have started to pick up mannerisms and habits and have started to talk and maybe even think like that individual. We become what we worship. We become what we worship. And so why bother with worship? Well, as people who naturally will worship, as people who will naturally hold different people or different things as being ultimately valuable, as ultimately worth pursuing, and if over time we naturally become what we worship, then it's possible that we can go spend our entire lives becoming something that we were never intended to become. If we're not careful about that question of what do we worship, it's possible that we can spend our entire lives becoming something that we were never intended to become. We learned last week how, as people, we were made in the image of God. that we were designed to reflect God's characteristics, his qualities, and his image to the world. That's the core design of who we are, to become like God in how we live and how we love and how we treat our fellow human beings. That's what we are intended to be his image bearers. And what we find all throughout the scriptures is the moment we turn from God and try to worship anything other than him, we find ourselves meeting disappointment and despair and darkness. David Foster Wallace's famous commencement speech at Kenyon College, I think, captures the disappointment of misguided worship really well. When he says, "Worship your body and beauty and sexual allure, and you will always feel ugly. And when time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally grieve you. Worship power, and you'll end up feeling weak and afraid. You'll need ever more power over others to numb you to your own fear. Worship your intellect, being seen as smart, and you'll end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out." Why does the psalmist in Psalm 100 say, "Know that the Lord is God, it is he who made us and we are his"? It's because he's trying to bring us back to whose we are, to whose image we are made in, as a way to properly align that natural drive all of us have to worship, to remind us whose we are and how we are to worship. Why bother with worship? Because it affects not only who we become as individuals, but who we become collectively as the people of God. If we become anything other than the people God intended us to become, then we don't reflect his image to the world and how we live personally and in how we live collectively as the people of God and as the church. Worship matters. And it begs the question, if worship is so fundamental to who we are as creatures, if it's something we do without even thinking about it, then how do we worship well? How do we worship well? Verse 2 of Psalm 100 says, "Worship the Lord." And then in verse 4 it says, "Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name." Worshiping well means that we worship the God that we were designed to worship. It means that we elevate God. We see him as being worthy, as being worth our best. We see him as someone who deserves our time, our attention, our focus, the one who deserves the very best of all that we are. Andrei Rublev is well known for his iconic creation of the popular icon of the Trinity. And the Trinity is probably one of the most hardest things to maybe wrap our minds around. But it's one of the most crucial components of Christian worship, because we worship one God who exists in three persons. And if that's hard to maybe wrap your mind around, then you're not alone. You're in good company. But what's important about the Trinity is not whether we understand it logically and whether it all makes sense to us, but whether we can see the dynamic of the beautiful relationship that's taking place in the Godhead himself. Throughout the pages of Scripture, you see that at the very center of the Trinity is a relationship that's held together by love, where the Father, Son, and Spirit love each other and exist in this perfect, harmonious relationship where there's honor and glory and this sense of worship existing in the Godhead itself. And this relationship has existed far beyond time, far beyond either of us entering into this world. It's something that has happened from eternity past to eternity future and will continue to go on and on and on. And when we welcome Christ into our lives in some mysterious way, we are invited into this relationship, into a relationship where there is love, affection, and honor on display. We're brought into this center of this beautiful dynamic relationship of God himself. Christian worship isn't necessarily about coming to a particular place. It's not necessarily about doing something in particular, but it's about entering into something that is already taking place. And that might sound like a bit philosophical, maybe a bit theoretical, but it's important to understand that when we sing songs here on Sundays or throughout the week, when we participate in something like communion, when we thank God for things throughout the course of our week, when we do things like the psalmist suggests, like praising God and shouting for joy, we aren't manufacturing worship in those moments. We aren't creating worship in those moments. But rather, those things actually guide us into something that's already taking place. They're designed to remind us of the worship that's already taking place in the heavens. Michael Thott is a professor of music and neuroscience, and he says that it'd be virtually impossible to teach young kids 26 individual letters as just pieces of information if you gave it to them. It'd be impossible almost. But when you take the 26 letters of the alphabet and you put it to music, all of a sudden, anyone as young as 3 years old can easily learn the alphabet with a little bit of music attached to it. Music has this ability to help us remember things and to hang on to information. And similarly, when we sing songs here collectively as a people, when we worship God through song, these songs incorporate characteristics and qualities of God himself. They include truths from the scriptures, and they remind us of the worship that is existing, that's going on right now. It's something that we tune into as we sing and repeat these songs over and over again. How do we worship God? We fix our attention fully on him, and we remind ourselves of the worship that's taking place in the universe. And what we find is that over time, the more we fix our attention on God, the more that we fix our hearts on him, the more we become like him, the more we reflect his characteristics in the world. And if you look at other religions throughout world history, maybe even now, in certain temples of certain religions, often the gods are represented in as idols, either through gold figurines or some other sort of metal idols of some sort. And it's these figurines that are, these idols that are worshipped by their followers. But when you look at the biblical narrative, you see something radically different than anything else in the world. God's image isn't represented in physical, man-made idols, but his image is represented in his creation through a people group, through us, through the church. We were created in God's image to reflect him to the world. And it's as we move into what it means to be God's people, people who live differently in the world, that we reflect his image to those around us. That's why Paul in Corinthians says, "Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's spirit dwells in your midst?" And so when answering that question, how do you worship well? It's less about what we do practically and more about the type of people we become, more about the posture we hold as people. Paul goes on in Romans to say as well in Romans 12, "Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." Paul makes it clear that worship is something we do with our entire self, with our whole self. We don't just worship on Sundays. We don't just worship when we sing songs. We don't just worship when we read the scriptures or spend time in prayer throughout the week. But we worship God with how we live our lives each and every moment of each and every day. You know, every Sunday night is a grocery shopping night in our house. And so later on tonight, as I do every week, I'll head out to Superstore, and I usually get back home around 8:30 at night. And over the last year, I've developed this habit where as I'm unloading groceries around 8:30 from my car to the house, if it happens to be a clear night out, when I go to get the last few items, the last run of things from the car, if it's a clear night, I'll stop in the middle of the sidewalk and I'll look up. And I'll try and locate the moon somewhere, wherever it is in the sky. And I'll try and see if I can count how many stars I can see in that given moment. And I don't know why this has become a practice of mine, but it's become one of my favorite practices of worship. Because when I look to the heavens and I see how large the universe and the world that God has created, there's a sense of awe and wonder that comes over me. There's a sense in which all of my life, all that I hold, all the good, bad, and ugly of my story starts to gain a little bit of perspective when I consider the largeness of the world that God has made. As people, there are so many things competing for our worship. The moment you walk out of these doors, you will be inundated from the moment you leave till when you go to bed with things that will be competing for your attention, for your mind, for your very heart. But when we consider the largeness of the world that we live in, when we consider the one who made the universe, when we consider the one who made the stars in the sky, when you consider the one who offers you forgiveness of sin, the one who made your very being, the one who gives you the breath that you're breathing in right now, the one who allows your heart to beat in this very moment, there should be a sense of awe and wonder that comes over us for this one. That we might see this one as being worthy of our attention, of our worship, of our very best. An author and pastor, A.W. Tozer, defined worship as this. He says, worship is to feel in your heart and to express in some way, in some appropriate manner, a humbling but delightful sense of admiring awe and astonished wonder, an overpowering love in the presence of that most ancient mystery, that majesty which philosophers call the first cause, but which we call our Father, which art in heaven. As we look to reimagine the church and answer the question, what is the church and why do we exist today? We are called to be a people who live differently in the world. And part of living different means that we give our very best, we give our attention, our minds, our heart, our soul to the one who made us. We spend our each and every moment of every day trying to worship him and how we live and in the people that we become. And so as we continue on in this new year, even though we're halfway through the month of January, let me invite you to consider what worshiping God might look like in your story. What would it look like for you to invest in everyday moments, habits, or patterns throughout your week where you can constantly tune your attention, your mind, and your focus to the one who made you, so that you too might enter into this type of worship that the psalmist describes? Would you pray with me? God, we thank you that in your mercy and in your wisdom and in your love, you not only created us, but you created us so that we might know you. And we pray that by your Spirit, you would allow our knowledge of you and our awareness of you to not just be something that sits in our head, but it would move down into the depth of our heart, and that it would cause us to look at you with a sense of worship, with a sense of wanting to live differently, with a sense of wanting to become more like you, wanting to be more like your image bearers that you created us to be. And so God, as we, your people, gather here today, would you instill in us that desire to worship, to be blown away with awe and wonder at who you are? We ask in your name. Amen.